And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your calls. We'll get to your tweets. So today is the start of a three-day mandatory minicamp. So unlike OTAs, everybody is expected to show up, and they're going to practice for the next 3 days, Paul. And the biggest difference between minicamp versus what you do in OTAs is the days are a bit longer, as Ben McAdoo indicated. The physicality is not going up a whole notch, but the days are a little bit longer in terms of the team spending time with one another.
That is true. No contact at all allowed on the field, and there are no one-on-one drills allowed either. You know, you can't do wide receiver against corner and do your one-on-one drills with that, or an offensive tackle against the defensive end, one-on-one drills with that. That's not allowed either. So those are like some of the differences, the biggest differences between what we're going to see here as opposed to what we're going to see in about 6 weeks when they actually start the real camp, when in a lot of cases there's hitting, or at least shells. Some days there's real pads, some days there's shells, and there's some contact, some days there's no contact. But you'll often see not only seven-on-sevens, but you'll see one-on-one drills between the positional groups during training camp. That's when they really ramp it up. This is not much of a ramp-up at all. It's pretty darn similar to what we just saw in the OTAs.
But it's another indication for some of the younger players to progress, get acclimated with the veterans and so forth. And
show that they know up here.
Of course, yeah. Translate what's in the classroom to the field. And if we look at what's occurred so far in OTAs, Paul, and I said this the other day on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and I'll rehash it, I've been impressed with the tight end group, and I'm going to continue to watch that during the course of minicamp. It's not just necessarily what they're doing. It's more of the development of some of the younger players, specifically a Jarrell Adams, what Evan Engram has brought to the table in the early stages, the arrival of Rhett Ellison. But also, you get to see the versatility and the fact that there's a lot of competition at that position.
There is. We've talked about it all spring, and I think it's funny because from a position of presumed weakness that this team had, you know, the last few years, all of a sudden now, it looks like it's going to be quite a battle over the course of the summer. I mean, you left out Matt Lacoste,
yeah,
and by all means, do not leave him out because he has had a terrific offseason to this point. Again, the caveat, can he stay on the field?
Durability.
You know? But, yeah, suddenly the Giants look like they've got a pretty darn group of tight ends, a good group that they can do a lot of different things with. And drafting Engram, signing Ellison, huge parts to that equation. The key here now for the next 3 days, to me, and we've seen guys get hurt around the league in OTAs, is, of course, keep everybody healthy. All right, come out of these 3 days clean.
No setbacks.
No issues. No setbacks, no issues, no new issues, nothing. You get that, send the guys away for 6 weeks, come back at the end of July, and now you hit the ground running and do everything that you need to do. And that's really the biggest news from the coach's perspective coming out of these 3 days. Yeah, it's going to be nice to see some of the young guys continue to show their football intelligence and some of their reactions and some of the mental things that they're able to do. That's really, really good, and you know the coach wants to see that. But more importantly, this is the last physical activity these guys are going to have together as a team before they go on that six-week vacation. And you just don't want anybody to have to go into the trainer's room during these 3 days.
You don't want to have also an injury lingering during the course of that break that then, God forbid, when you come back and you rejoin the team during training camp, you got to start fresh.
Just come through clean. That's all. Come through clean.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. Your thoughts on the start of mandatory minicamp, what you're looking forward to. Everything is up for discussion here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jimmy is in New York. He gets us going. What's happening, Jimmy?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you today?
Doing well, Jimmy.
Great.
What do you got for us?
All right. I was thinking just the other day about the draft the last 4 years. I think Jerry Reese and his crew, the scouts, have to be commended, especially 2016. If you really break it down with last year's draft class and the fact that Darian Thompson has yet to get on the field, you also have Jarrell Adams coming into his own, and I think the Giant coaching staff is giving an indication that B.J. Goodson is ready to make that leap. they literally have a shot of going 6-6 in the 2016 draft. And if you put that, the free agents on top of that, the work that you got out of Andrew Adams and the early success you got out of Aquaro, I think Eli Manning is going to be set up to have a really solid nucleus until he retires.
I love the point. Go ahead. I, you know what? Let me hold you there for just a second because it's important.
Sure.
I bring this number up, and then I'm going to let you finish.
Okay.
It was going into that past off season after the 2015 season, going into 16, that I had said to people going into the draft, the Giants are 8 to 10 players away, and I'm talking about serious good players who are at least rotational players, 8 to 10 away from being a legitimate team you could talk about in the playoff conversation. Well, what you just outlined is why they made the playoffs this past year. Because they came up with about 8 guys in last year's haul, and if you want to stretch it a little, you could say as many as 10, who were significant parts of a quality ball club, and that's how they were able to turn it around in 1 year. Right now, this team is probably 2 or 3 players away from being a Super Bowl champion. But
and you know what?
We still don't know.
If you don't mind me adding to that, if you look at the 14 draft and 15 draft, although it wasn't all around as good as 2016, you got an all-star, could be the best receiver in the game as we speak in OBJ. You got Landon Collins, who obviously is an absolute stud from the safety position. You got Weston Richburg, who's borderline all-pro. So, you know, if you look at the stat, like you always say, Paul, that Bill Polian says, if you hit on 130 of your draft, between 14, 15, and 16, the Giants literally could have went with their free agent signings 8-for-8 in 2016. You got Landon Collins, OBJ, Weston Richburg. With those draft guys, I think you hit on maybe not all of them, but probably 40 to 50% of them in 14 and 15, coupled with the fact of the free agent signings with Janoris Jenkins, Damon Harrison, and Olivier Vernon. I would be shocked, beyond shocked. I don't want to jinx my Giant team because I do believe in the jinx, okay? I got to believe for Eli's next 4 years, and hopefully we can get another 4 years out of Eli. They set themselves up nicely. They surrounded the guy with a real team offensively as well as defensively.
I'd also throw Keenan Robinson into that list too. I think he's 100, worthy.
100%. The guy had
name.
A fantastic
yeah.
year.
You know, I would add one more thing here. What you have just outlined is why it's incredible to think about what the Patriots have done to consistently have this playoff team and Super Bowl contender year after year after year after year for over a decade. It's truly amazing at what they've done, and I hope people can put their hatred aside for the Patriots and understand how truly amazing it is to watch that franchise go to work. But what you've said about the Giants, for most teams in the league, if you're not the Patriots, you're only able to cluster those kinds of years together, what, once or twice every 20 years, you know, where that 4 or 5 year span just works out so well that most of your picks produce, that most of your free agents produce. It just doesn't happen. Think of Polian's percentage, 1/3 of the time. So the odds are going to be against you, which is why the Giants must get it done now. I think the window is 2 years, this year and next year. Beyond that, I think because of the length of the contracts, the financial commitments to some of the contracts, it's going to be very, very, very tricky. Not that it can't be done, but for the Giants to continue to make this a 3-4-5 year contending team. It's going to be really hard. Maybe they can do it. But I'd say for right now, think about this as a 2 year run to get the Lombardi.
Can I make one more statement before I hang up?
Sure.
And I want to pose a question that I will take the answer off the air. The statement I want to make about the left tackle and the right tackle, I know, Paul, you're not big on Pro Football Focus and the grading system, but I'm a big football fan, and I know the grading system has been around since Vince Lombardi, probably even before that. And although Pro Football Focus doesn't give you the entire story, but I think generally they do a pretty good job. And if you look at the production First of all, I've been a fan of Eric Flowers since the day he stepped onto the field. Yes, he has some problems in the pass protection department, but I know from day one when he in the preseason game as a rookie, as a 21-year-old kid, I seen the guy frustrate Sheldon Richardson from the New York Jets. Sheldon Richardson was an all-pro at the time. That carried over into the first game of the season where the Dallas Cowboy guy ripped his helmet off because in the run game, he was 100% frustrating people from day one. Okay, I know Pro Football Focus had him labeled one of the worst his rookie year, primarily because of his pass blocking. But last year, he did make the jump from 78 out of 80 tackles graded. I believe last year they had him as 59 out of 80. If you guys remember with the free agent signings on the defense last year, I think most Giants fans would have been very happy if the Giants defense catapulted from 31st in the league to the top 15. You guys remember posing that question last year?
Yeah.
Would Giants fans be happy if they were in the top 15?
That was the goal, to try to make it to the middle of the pack, get to 15, 16.
Right. Yeah.
And if you could do better than that, great, but you want to get to 15, 16.
Now, the question I have about, first of all, I really like Flowers. I think he's going to turn things around. But the question I will ask before I hang up, and I'll take the answer off the air, if you guys could say, grading system-wise, if Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart finished up in the top 50% respectively at their positions at left tackle and right tackle, would we be content with that type of jump from years two to years three? And I will take the you guys' answer off the air. I love the show. You guys do a great job, and we'll speak to you real soon.
All right, Jimmy. Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not big on specific percentages, and I'm not one that looks crazily at Pro Football Focus.
I'm not
either.
Big on analytics rankings you all know.
So this is what I will say, though, in response to Jimmy's statement. The goal is you want to see continued improvement. I don't know if you want to see an exact form of improvement. You just want to see that by the time Eric Flowers had his rookie year to now, that you're constantly seeing progression in the right direction. Same thing for Bobby Hart, Paul. That's what you want to see. And, the other thing that I'll throw in, and I'm not that familiar in terms of how much they take into consideration, but, when you look at Flowers last season, the penalties were noticeable. That's something
that has
to be cleaned up.
Very much so.
That's beyond technique and everything else. The penalties.
Well, technique winds up leading to penalties.
It is synonymous, but I guess I'm looking at that as a separate category, Paul. And to me, what I'm looking for in terms of improvement is the penalties to come down big time in terms of almost one per game or sometimes, multiple ones in each or per contest as you looked at last season. So, I think that if you can show me that there's a continued progression from year one to year three, I think that obviously the organization as a whole will be pretty content with that.
Well, I think personally, when you draft an Eric Flowers as high as you draft him, you're expecting him to be a blue chipper, and you're expecting him at that spot in the draft. And I'm not big on going back and
revisionist
history. Thank you very much.
Yes.
But here's what I will say. Just to be middle of the pack, no. When you draft a guy like Flowers in that spot, you want him to be better. You want him to be a bona fide stud at the spot. Even if he doesn't make the Pro Bowl, you want him to be one of the top six or seven at the position. And seven tackles aren't going to make it. Okay, eight tackles aren't going to make it to the Pro Bowl, but you want him to be that high when you draft him there. So I think the answer to your question is, yes, I'm with Lance all the way. You want continued improvement from both of those guys, and you want them to get as good as they possibly can be and max out because that's going to help your ball club. But if you're asking me specifically what ranking does Eric Flowers have to be at before they're satisfied, I think they're satisfied when he maxes out as a star left tackle because that's where he was drafted.
Well, that's the end goal. But if we're going
to But to get to the Super Bowl this year, he doesn't have to be a Pro Bowl player.
I would agree with you there. And to be realistic, if we're at least to place expectations at a decent level. I would say, once again, we're not expecting him to make the leap where he's considered a top five offensive lineman in the NFL. But once again, if he can make another jump in terms of his consistency as an offensive lineman, that's big. Because keep this in mind. How many people thought Landon Collins, we'd be looking at him in this light, Paul, as we were talking about him at this time last year?
From a rookie who went through a lot of growing pains to suddenly a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year.
Unbelievable jump. I mean, I don't think, listen, if Eric Flowers did that, that would be phenomenal. I don't think anybody's going to complain, but let's at least put expectations in check and let's be reasonable.
Not everybody can be Aaron Judge.
Yes. Flash overnight. One of the other things, though, I wanted to hit on connected to the recent draft classes before we get back to the phone lines, the last caller was pointing to the 2016 class, and I agree. I think if you look top to bottom, this could be an impactful class depending on what happens in the next few seasons. But when you evaluate a draft, I think what you want to see is it's not so much hitting on the Odell Beckhams and the Landon Collins of the world, Paul. It's the extra bonus when you can hit on those mid to late round picks. And what's promising about the 16 classes entering this year, you're looking at potentially B.J. Goodson being in line to be the starting middle linebacker, okay?
Yes.
That is pick number 4 from 2016. Pick number 5 was Paul Perkins. He is in line to be the starting running back, okay? Those are two late-round picks that are essentially going to be starters. And then Jarrell Adams is not projected to be a starter, but if he can take a step further in terms of his progression and maybe be in the mix, contribute on special teams, to get that type of production out of a sixth-round pick in year two is certainly a bonus as well. So you're looking at 4, 5, and 6 from 16. I mean, even if you want to throw in Darian Thompson at 3, Paul, that's 3 starters out of a span of 4 players for the 2016 class. And we're only a year removed from that draft.
Well, again, you know, remember what happened in 2007 when that entire rookie class gave them something at some point during that season, and the Giants wound up winning the Super Bowl. That's lightning in a bottle stuff. You know, it doesn't come by every year like that. There are going to be many and many years and many and many gaps between seasons when you're able to not only hit on the bulk of your draft choices, but also hit on the bulk of your free agent signees. That's just not the way the game is. Your percentage is going to be poor. And you just have to learn to accept it and live with it. That's why when you get this close and you have that many guys producing at once, and especially either young or in the prime of their careers, you've got to get the gold then. I mean, ask Rex Ryan how he feels about his Jets tenure. They had a 2-year window to make something happen. They didn't make it happen. And now it's, okay, when are we ever going to see the light at the end of that tunnel again? A long time.
Well, and they also had a young quarterback, though, during that window, too. If they had a more established quarterback, that, I think, changes the conversation. But you're right. In terms of when your window is there, you have to take advantage of it because you're not guaranteed the following season. You're not guaranteed full health. You're not guaranteed depth. Those are all wild cards year to year.
Got
to
do it.
Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Justin is in Dallas. Justin, what's happening?
How's it going, Lance?
Hi.
How's it going, Paulie?
Doing well, Justin.
Man, I just wanted to tell you guys, man, I'm even here, just being in the hospital, man, I'm having surgery this morning. I'm just thinking about
good luck to you.
Wow. About everybody coming back to work, man, and I'm just really excited. You know, it keeps a little calm in my spirit. Obviously, going under anesthesia, you can't be focused, right? So,
so
I got to do something to get my mind off of everything else, man. But
well, Justin, before we let you continue, first of all, hope the surgery goes well, and we certainly appreciate you tuning in between being in the hospital. I mean, that is some serious dedication
Absolutely.
On your
that
part.
That is
so,
diehard
so,
Giants
thank you
fan,
very
man.
Much
Holy
for
smokes.
Being part of the program.
Please feel better.
Yeah.
And you call us
yeah,
after you're,
thank you,
after you're all good. You call us back from your living room, okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to touch on one thing, and it's just about everybody being sensitive about, you know, everything around Odell and the whole organization, thinking this, that, the third, blah, blah, blah. Man, let's not pay any mind to the outsiders this year. This is our year, and I told myself if God wakes me up today after my surgery, the Giants are winning the Super Bowl. So as long as you hear from me again, I know we're going to take it that far. Some people may say that's too far to think about it, but, man, let's think about it. Man, we're a championship organization, so they can't put anything past this organization. I got trust in everybody around me, you know, the whole organization. I mean, Jerry Reese has done a really good job drafting, and I think he's done a fantastic job, and I'm just really loving the way that the organization is going. are looking currently. So just wanted to all the fans, everybody, that I love everybody. I love anybody that bleeds blue, anybody that reps blue, well, my blue, because there's other blues, but they don't matter. So, man, go Giants. Love you all and look forward to a successful season.
All right, Justin, man, enjoy the opener in Dallas.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and once again, best of luck with the surgery, Justin. We hope to hear from you soon. Get well and appreciate the phone call. Well, that may go down as one of the most notable phone calls in BBKL history. I tell you, I have not heard that one. In terms of being in the hospital and finding a way to chime in on the conversation here on Big Blue.
Just before he gets the anesthesia,
yeah,
too.
Certainly appreciate that, Justin.
That is strong.
Yes.
Real strong.
Now, as far as minicamp and some of the storylines to watch, we've been going over the position battles, where there's depth, the type of offseason that we saw in 16, and how that really redefined this team. And that's what we started off the program with. And it goes beyond the draft. It also takes into consideration the combination of what they brought in free agency, Paul. I mean, when you look at, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but depending on what happens in 2017, I think we're going to look back at that 2016 offseason as a huge turning point in the history of this franchise.
Especially if they win. I mean, it's
if they don't win, though.
It's one thing to be a playoff team, but now, please, folks, I'm not going to be a Debbie Downer here. But if they fall short, if something goes wrong this year, and circumstances conspire against them, and they don't make the playoffs. And all of a sudden now, you know, it's another 3, 4, 5 years of trying to fix things and melt things together again. Then all we're going to do is say, well, you know what, that was a fluke. It was an aberration. It was one terrific season. But what happened? How'd they follow it up? To me, they've got to do something with this. You know, if they have a playoff season, if they have three playoff seasons in a row, okay, 16, 17, 18. And if one of those years they at least get to the NFC Championship game, then I'm with you. Then you can look back and say, hey, you know, that was a nice mini run there. That was a turning point. It was a mini run. That meant something. That was something you could sink your teeth into. But, you know, for a team to just maybe make the playoffs once and then if things go by the wayside, I think it's premature to start talking about what you're talking about.
Well, I guess I'm not going that far, but if we go with your premise that if they can at least make a run and make the playoffs consistently, I would look at that as a success to warrant labeling 2016 as a turning point, given Paul, and I'm going to bring up, I mean, the droughts that we've experienced here in the last few years.
Well,
if you wind up making the playoffs with this group three consecutive seasons,
that's a big
putting
deal.
Putting aside the result, that's a big deal considering there was a 4-year stretch with no postseason.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, this is my 35th year, and the 4-year drought that the Giants missed the playoffs was the longest drought of my tenure covering the team. And you know, I don't know how many people can say that around the league, but, you know, I'll be honest with you. It's been a lot of fun around these guys.
Which also, by the way, to put it in perspective, is not a lengthy drought when you look at NFL landscape.
No, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
I mean, in terms of you being here, I get it. But I'm talking about if you look at what other teams have had to deal with in terms of their droughts not making the playoffs, this is nothing.
Oh, no.
It's a very small period of time.
It really is.
So it's all relative in terms of who you're talking about within the conversation.
But, you know, obviously, though, what it comes down to, if you're a Giants fan of you know, the baby boomer or younger generation, you're always going to measure it by the Parcells era. And when you look at what happened during the Parcells era and you say, okay, he was here for practically a decade, a little bit less, but almost a decade, and two Super Bowl championship teams, and they made the playoffs in more than half the seasons that he was here. And in fact, even non-playoff season, they had a double-digit win season that they didn't make.
88-10-6.
So, you know, there were a lot of wins in there. And that's kind of where the bar is set, I think, for people, you know, who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s. You're setting the bar by the Parcells era. And I think, you know, to some degree, you're setting it by the Coughlin era. Coughlin had half of his teams went to the playoffs, and he got two Super Bowls. So, you know, Tom match Bill. Now the question's going to be, does McAdoo match either one of those guys? Can he put together a 10-year run here with half the teams getting to the playoffs and at least getting one championship? Maybe two? I think, to me, that's where the bar is. I mean, that's just me. That's where.
In fairness, Paul, I mean,
hell, my father can tell me about the years in the late 50s and early 60s where they were getting to the NFL championship game on an annual basis. I mean, they were like the Yankees or the NFL.
But then, in fairness, though, there's also the period of time from the mid-60s.
Oh, I remember that.
So, and where the drought really.
Oh, boy.
Went fairly
9-5, 1970, 8-6, 1972. Yeah. The only two winning seasons during that dark period.
So
I remember it well.
So I guess your point is really, and I don't disagree with you there, that you're probably going to relate to the generation that you were raised when you were young and what you were brought up in, but that's going to vary across the board in terms of the Giants fan base. Some it's going to be Coughlin, some it's going to be Parcells.
Those are the two eras, though. You want to put the bar at those two eras.
Because those were very successful. Yes, but then the eras of Sherman and Webster, for example.
Sherman started off really well.
Well, started off, but then the latter part.
Then it got kind of rough.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it all depends on, once again, I think that's a generational
type of
conversation.
A couple 6-7 win teams in there, too, for Allie. They weren't necessarily dreadful.
No disrespect to Sherman. Don't worry.
I'm a big Allie Sherman guy. I got to know him. Great guy, by the way. Great. I mean, he's passed away. God rest his soul. But Allie was awesome. Allie, you talk about X's and O's. Yeah, you know, you young folks, you don't remember, but he was the first guy who was the analyst on ESPN's Monday Night Matchup on the television show that used to be on every week around the Monday Night games. He was the ultimate X's and O's guy. And I don't think I ever came away from a conversation with Allie Sherman during my entire time that I knew him that I didn't at least learn one thing from that conversation every single time. That's how incredibly smart he was.
That's why he made the transition to broadcasting, because when you can understand the nuts and bolts about the game, I think that makes it a lot easier.
He was an X's and O's guy to the 100th degree. I miss him. Miss him a lot.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Mohammed is in New Jersey. Mohammed, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Mohammed. What do you got for us?
Hi.
Awesome. By the way, Paul, I love the morning selfie. It's a game face if I ever seen one.
there you go.
So I just want to talk about, I mean, a little bit about how the excitement for this upcoming season. I mean, as a fan, you're always excited. But, I mean, on paper, you look at 2 years ago when our defense really struggled. And then you see what Jerry Reese did in the offseason. And, I mean, he made us an elite defense. You watch it. They passed the eye test. Like, it's insane. And then last year, the offense obviously struggled. I think Victor Cruz played very much out of position, the outside. I don't think Rashad Jennings was as explosive as maybe Paul Perkins could have been. And what did we do in this offseason? I mean, we've got Brandon Marshall on the outside, who I think can be a number one other team. We have Paul Perkins and Wayne Gallman, who is going to be my dark horse for this season. I'm very excited about him. He's very, very much NFL ready, I think. When you watch his game tape, his elusiveness and the way he runs with power, it's a really nice combo. So I think we're going to be very ready for this NFL season. That brings a lot of excitement. So the question I had for you guys was regarding the depth of the team. A team is really obviously only as good as the depth is. And you look at the Patriots last season, you know, they had their slew of injuries, and obviously you still see the run that they made. If you guys had to name a position that could most afford an injury to, and then a position that you could least afford an injury to, where would you kind of pick those two positions, whether it's offense or defense? Well, I'll take the answer off the air, but real quickly for me, I think the position we could most afford an injury would be the running back. Like I said, I think we have a lot of young guys there, a lot of hungry guys, Shane Vereen coming back. I like Orleans Darko when he's healthy, and like I said, I like Wayne Gallman a lot. And then as far as the position we could least afford, I think the easy answer probably goes to left tackle. Say what you will about Ereck Flowers, but, you know, the depth behind specifically the left tackle, you know, I'm not really sure how much confidence I have in that. But I think I'd more so say the cornerback position. I think those three cornerbacks we have in our defense are such a staple for that defense. And if you lose one of them, I think that really takes a big hit. So I'll listen to your guys' answer off there. Thank you, guys.
Mohammed, appreciate the phone call. I think it's a really good question. When you look at the roster, which position do you feel you're in good shape? Which position do you think perhaps you need to see a little bit more before you feel you're comfortable? And I would personally...
Running back isn't a bad choice there.
Running back's not a bad choice, but I think wide receiver is where I would start with, where I think that if one of the guys went down, we have some proven commodities.
Be careful who you pick.
I'm not going to even throw out any specific
You know, I don't even want to talk about this. This is a horrible way to talk about the season. It really is.
Well, you're very superstitious with respect to that. But I still think it's a very good question because it's a good way to evaluate what the depth chart looks like.
I think running back, even if you lost one of the guys at the top of the depth chart, we're all assuming that Drone is kind of on the back end, but he's already proven he can step in and fill in for a guy at the NFL level.
Well, but some of the other guys, I think, are still young. I mean, Goleman, I agree with the caller. He's got upside. We haven't seen Goleman play one NFL game.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you feel content with a few guys, but I don't know if it goes all the way down the list. I look at wide receiver. Dwayne Harris has had experience. He could fill in for injury, Paul. Roger Lewis, we've seen him. Tavares King, we've seen him. I'm not saying they're as proven as some of the other guys at the top of the depth chart, but I named you three guys that have been in this system and have gotten reps last season.
I've seen
that to me is a little bit different than perhaps some of the running backs.
Marshall gets hurt, it's a huge deal because nobody replaces the big target that he provides.
Well, the respect also that the defender has
OBJ
to now move
gets
towards
hurt
him too. I agree with you there.
Can't replace him. Shepard gets hurt. Right now he's turning into one of the premier slot receivers in the game. You can't replace him either. So I disagree with you on that one entirely. Because
well,
I think if any of those three guys goes down, you don't replace them, and it impacts the offense across the board. I think it's very, very bad.
Well, but if Perkins went down, to build an analogy to your point about the wide receiver, if you put in Sean Drone there, you don't think that the mindset of the defense changes a little bit?
Well, maybe you put Goleman in the spot, and
maybe he winds up doing what Perkins did. You keep saying that he's
a lot like Perkins.
Well, but the point is there's an if that's part of the preface of that statement. That's my point. Whereas
But I've seen the other receivers, and they've all proven they're nowhere near what those other three guys are.
And I'm not making the case that Dwayne Harris is Brandon Marshall. The point I'm making is that we've seen the guys step into roles within the system and at least produce. That's the extent of my point.
I would only say in terms of the spots where you don't want it, I agree you don't want it at left tackle, obviously.
Yep.
That would be really bad. And it would certainly be really bad if it happened to one of the top three corners. We saw that in Green Bay already. But what about the quarterback? All due respect to the two fellas who have played in this league before and are practicing out on the field momentarily, with all due respect, Mr. Smith and Mr. Johnson, Eli Manning goes down. That's not pretty. I mean,
well, I thought Mr. Superstition over here wouldn't even bring that up. I'm actually surprised that you're even throwing that out here.
But he was asking the question.
For a guy that was uncomfortable talking about this,
you
went to the quarterback.
But I'm trying to help him. He wants an answer. I'm trying to give him an answer.
No, I mean,
you talk about falling off a cliff.
Well, I think that's the one that goes without saying.
I mean, Eli's going to the Hall of Fame.
But to me, though, quarterback aside, I think cornerback is where I'd start, just like I'd start with wide receiver on the flip side. And here's why with cornerback. Number one, you go back to the playoff game. And when DRC went down, I think we've talked that to death.
Yeah.
We understand what happened. But the other part about that is that from this point on, from mandatory minicamp through training camp, this is a statement opportunity for the back end of the cornerback depth chart. When you look at some of the names here, Valentino Blake is a new arrival. He's a key special teams contributor. Let's see what he can do in the preseason when he's thrown into some roles. Let's see what he can do in training camp. I think Michael Hunter is a name to watch, too. He's been here in the system, but maybe this is an opportunity for him to move up. Dante Dion, we saw him flash last training camp, but then we see his size disadvantage is going to be an uphill battle going back to that Buffalo preseason game. So he's another name to watch. The point is there's players in the mix, but there's not a lot of proven commodities. So that's why I think it's fair to say cornerback to me would be the first one on my list where doesn't mean you don't have depth. It's just you want to see more before you're willing to say there is depth or there is some proven commodities out there.
Yeah.
So that's where I would go.
And perhaps if Flowers were to be unavailable, Justin Pugh would probably go out to left tackle, and they could probably get by because they could plug one of these other guys into the guard spot where they have some depth.
Yeah.
So you could be right in that regard, that the corner spot, you know, the more I think about it, after quarterback, cornerback is probably the most dangerous position.
Well, and here's the other thing with the offensive line. You mentioned there's depth at guard, but I think if you look at the depth chart from last year, Paul, to the depth chart at least entering the 2017 training camp session, I would think on paper you feel a little bit better in terms of some of the versatility and options on the back end of the depth chart for the offensive line. No? I mean, the arrival of DJ Fluker, that's a starting caliber offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
If John Jerry loses out, John Jerry is a starting caliber offensive lineman. Brett Jones had significant playing time last year. He's very much in the mix on the back end, too. And then you take into consideration some of the young prospects who I don't think you had as many young prospects at this time last year. So I think on paper, if I were to compare offensive lineman to corner, I'd still feel a little bit better about offensive lineman, even though we haven't seen all these guys on the field.
I think that's very understandable.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. Len is in Columbia. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Len?
Doing well, Len. What do you got for us?
Good. Listen, Paul, my God, I almost hung up when you mentioned that quarterback scenario. Please.
I know. Oh, you know, and I think
the one thing we do know, and we have to face facts. Yeah. I mean, this roster on paper, I don't know. Maybe I got him overrated, but I think this roster's loaded.
It's really good.
You know, when you look at him on
it's
paper,
really good.
You know, when you start talking about your fourth and fifth corner. I mean, you know, the loss at corner has to be catastrophic almost for your, I mean, in terms of numbers, for your fourth and fifth, to come into play. We even see an injury within a game making a difference. That usually happens when you're playing really good teams.
Correct.
As we know, and you cited the Cromartie thing with Green Bay. But it plays such an important part, and you just keep your fingers crossed that everything's going to be okay. And that, we don't get hit at one position. You know, lose three tight ends, yeah. Lose two centers, those kinds mm-hmm. of things that can hurt. Given the quality of injuries, not including Eli, I just think this team is loaded. I mean, 10 games might get us to the playoffs, but I see us winning more than that. This is the window, Paul. Lance, you talked about it. I mean, this is the time. It's got to happen now. I don't think we'll see a mix in this 3 years, starting with last year, which I want to talk about in just a second. Yeah, the mix within this 3 years is just. I mean, this is it. If you're a Giants fan, you look at it, you say, this is it. I mean, this is the period I tell my kids about. 10 years from now,
Len, if you remember the 1990 team. When, they had Everson Walls, Dave Duerson,
yes.
Johnny Cooks,
yes.
Steve DiAsi, all these guys, who they had hit on as veteran free agents that, nobody was really thinking much about when they signed them, and they became important parts
yes,
to a
indeed.
Super Bowl team. Well, that's what's happened here with the guys like Jonathan Casillas, Keenan Robinson.
Yep.
To some degree, Brandon Marshall, though he's still a star, I suppose,
but
he's on the end of his career, you know.
Yeah.
Rhett Ellison, not so much thought about.
Yeah.
In some ways, there's a real parallel to the 1990 team.
Paul, I think you've hit on it, and you've got to have the right feeling in the front office about your team to assemble it the way the Giants have assembled it. I mean, when you're pressing for the playoffs – It seems to me over the years that the bulk of that team has got to be the 4 to 8 guys, the 4-year to 8-year guys, and those are the guys we're picking up off the street. I mean, look at Corbin Bryant. If we were going to go 2-14, Paul, Corbin Bryant isn't on this team. I mean, you're not going to sign a Corbin Bryant. You're going to go with some younger player. So you even get the feeling that the front office is saying. I mean, this is it, and indeed, I hope we stay healthy, and I hope it works out. I wanted to talk about your turning point that you made, earlier in the show, and how we might look back at last year as being a turning point. I think we look back at last year as being a turning point. Paul, I know you felt this. I didn't get the feeling so much from Lance and John, but that's okay. But I got the feeling from you. There was an emotion in your voice. I don't want to call it a desperateness, but you knew we had to make the playoffs last year. That would have been franchise-changing if we didn't. Not because we spent all the money, but you start talking about 5 years, and you fall in with a group of teams, name the Tennessee Titans, the Jacksonville Jaguars, teams that haven't made the playoffs in a long Buffalo, the Jets,
I mean,
teams that haven't made playoffs, 20% of the league. We're down with the dregs of the NFL. It was critical last year. I think the franchise would have changed dramatically if we hadn't made the playoffs last year.
Len, that's why it was so important for the quarterback, the future Hall of Fame quarterback, to feel extremely comfortable in the next direction this team was going in, and clearly one of the main reasons why Ben McAdoo was named head coach, because they really knew the significance and the importance of this team doing something positive in 16. You're absolutely right. Now, whether or not it turns out to be a turning point, we'll talk about that years from now. But there was one thing I can tell you for sure. This team was taking on a lot of water if they did not make the playoffs last year.
Oh my gosh.
Well,
the coach went the year before. Now you start looking at management. You know, if you don't go for 5 years, I think there was one general manager in the league who had remained the general manager during the 5 years that the team didn't make the playoffs.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Talking about upheaval within the front office if you don't make it 5 years in a row in the modern NFL.
It does become a volatile situation.
But we made it.
That's right. So it doesn't matter. Don't talk about it anymore.
And to me, that was indeed franchise changing. Now the next step, we can't not do it this year. Right? We just have to make the play. We can't make it last year and go 4 years without doing it. I mean,
you certainly want to build off of the foundation that was provided last season. But, you know, and I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but I think it's also important to note, Len, the parity in the NFL and also the up and downness of the NFC East specifically, where we've seen a lot of teams that look really good on paper and it doesn't always translate. So you have to also look at the track record of this division. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that the Giants are going to take a step back, but it's been very difficult for teams that do well one season to then piggyback off of that the following season. I mean, there's a reason why nobody's duplicated as division champs. Going back to until the Eagles did it 4 years in a row in the early 2000s. Now, I understand the Giants didn't win the division last year, so they could still very well win the division and that wouldn't continue that trend. But all I'm saying is that we've seen teams from the bottom go to the top and then vice versa.
Absolutely.
It's happened a lot in this division.
Lance, you're absolutely right. It's that kind of division. These teams are close. Yeah. The rivalries are unbelievable. I mean, it changes on a dime. I just have that good feeling. By the way, I mean, this coaching staff, I mean, I feel really good about this coaching staff. I think McAdoo, I mean, you almost see it in his eyes at the news conferences, at the press conferences. I mean, you just feel it. This guy's got this under control. And, I feel the same. I mean, Spags, I've always been a Spag. You know, I've always liked Spags. I think it's that New Jersey, upbringing and background and, you know. He's just a good coach. Remember, he's from the New England area.
I mean, this team is all there.
Let's stay healthy. Let me ask you a quick question about Rhett Ellison. Within the last few years, every time I've heard, calf ailment, it really hasn't turned out real well. I mean, we could go back to Berhe. We could go back to Victor. I mean, I'm hoping it's just a precaution that doesn't turn into something long-term. Obviously, he's there. I'd love to know whether he works at all today. But I hear calf, and I think, I think Victor, and I think Nat Berhe, and I hope it's not too serious. Can you guys shed any light on that? What are you hearing about?
Well, I mean, in terms of the calf injury, and Len, we're going to let you go here. We appreciate the phone call. He has been limited, but I think that goes back to what Len brought up, Paul. They're at the point of this season where they don't want to overdo it and then, God forbid, have it linger into training camp. So I'd be very surprised if they try to push him here during the course of mandatory minicamp.
I don't know where he stands right now because we have to head out to the practice field in just a few minutes and we'll get a better idea then. I would only say this. I think it's because of that worry that they are going to be extra sensitive to a schedule for a guy coming back from a calf injury. And so if there is anything to be learned from the negativity that they had to endure with losing those guys for extended periods of time, you have to think they're going to put that into play. So, you know what? I appreciate your worrisome feelings about it, but I would say I'm sure they've learned a lot from dealing with these things now, as many teams have. And I'd like to believe that they're in a better position to manage it.
And Ellison's a player that has dealt with a season-ending knee injury before. He bounced back from
that.
Oh,
he's tough.
So, I mean, there is some durability that I think he's showcased in also regrouping and recovering from injuries. So I don't know if I'd necessarily throw him in that category of the Nat Burhaes, who have had some lingering issues, and Victor Cruz. But I can understand Len's point. I mean, the last thing you want to do is hear about something that's keeping a guy on the sideline.
Sure.
But let's put it this way. When we get to training camp, if this is maybe still somewhat of an issue, then perhaps it's something to talk about in greater detail. I don't think we're there yet, because he's going to have, remember, a 5 to 6 week period after this 3-day mandatory minicamp where he can focus on getting back to full strength 100% and then being ready to go at the start of training camp. We get there and it's still a part of the narrative, then I think maybe I can understand where Len's coming with in terms of his fears. I don't
sure.
think we're necessarily there at this point right now. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We're going to get to some tweets here, but Dave, our top-notch producer, actually, just to put things in perspective in terms of teams with longer droughts, mm-hmm. he did some homework. So Buffalo, 17 years. Cleveland, 14. The Rams, 12. Jacksonville, 9, as well as Tampa Bay. Tennessee, 8. The Jets and the Bears, 6. So those are all longer than what the Giants went through when they missed the playoffs for 4 straight years. No one else, though, is longer than 3 years in terms of current droughts. But that's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams with droughts of 6 or more years right now in the NFL.
You know what
that's
really hurts about
league.
That list? When you see that list, what makes you really wince, and I'm not trying to be funny here, I mean this, Bills fans who haven't made it for 17 years and have to live with the fact that they lost all those Super Bowls.
Yeah.
That's rough. And it's a reason why I'm so glad that the new ownership up there is keeping the team there. They're committed to the Buffalo community and the area. You know, they're great fans up there at Orchard Park. Oh, it's you know, it may be an old stadium, but they've retrofitted it in a pretty good way, and I hope the Buffalo Bills never leave there. And because those people breathe the Bills, just like the Packers fans breathe the Packers in Green Bay. They're no different in Buffalo. They really aren't. And, you know, so they're not, it's not title town because they don't have all those Lombardis. Big deal. It does not dampen the enthusiasm and the blood that those Bills fans bleed. So, that's rough.
Well, that team is life and death up there. I mean, that's the biggest thing up there. I mean, they have the Sabres, but the Bills have a great deal of tradition and history.
As is Green Bay in Green Bay.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, I think what you just said, though, Paul, and I mean, I think when you look at NFL history, those Bills teams that made 4 straight Super Bowls and lost, probably, though, one of the most underappreciated dynasties. And I'm willing to call it a dynasty because it was a dynasty. I know they didn't win.
Well, how do you think Vikings fans feel?
Yeah.
You know? And Broncos fans felt the same way. And Mile High was a pretty rabid place to be, too, until Elway finally broke through.
Whereas
anyway.
The Bills, though, the problem is, though, they never broke through. They never regrouped after that. That's the biggest issue.
No,
right.
And in Denver, people ski. I mean, they do have a love for something else.
They can ski in Buffalo, too, the last time. I think there's enough substance.
But they don't, yeah, but they don't love skiing in Buffalo like they do in Colorado.
Not as passionate.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And
the terrain's a bit
And in Minnesota, hockey is really, really, really big in Minnesota. In Buffalo, it's just like it is in Green Bay. It is the NFL. It's the Bills. It's the Packers. My goodness. Those teams, every breath they take, 365 days a year, those people love their teams. Anyway.
Well, speaking of the Buffalo Bills, the longest drought in Giants history was what we were talking about earlier, which was also, believe it or not, 17 years.
I know.
Well, I know you know, but we're just reminding the audience who may not be aware of what happened from 1964 to 1980.
Came 1970. 9-5, took a 3-0 lead against the L.A. Rams at Yankee Stadium. Win that game, they're going to be a wild card. And they go up 3-0 on a Pete Gogolak field goal. And then the Rams score 31 consecutive points and blow out the Giants at Yankee Stadium, 31-3. The Giants finish 9-5 and do not make the playoffs. That was a very, very difficult season finale. Because it was in the middle of the dark period.
Well, and you remember it like it was yesterday.
I do.
Which I'm not surprised, by the way. That was also one
I remember
of...
it like it was an hour ago, never mind yesterday.
That was one of only two winning campaigns.
8-6
in
72.
Yep.
72, the year Norm Snead went to the Pro Bowl because he led the league in passing. in his first season with the Giants after coming over in the multiple player Fran Tarkenton deal.
That is the historical segment of Big Blue Kickoff.
We had
Live.
To do something
we
historical.
We had to, exactly. Well, in fairness, we did get into a little NFL history,
yes.
So I don't think it was completely off topic. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to take a look at some of your tweets. Phone lines are still open as well at 201-939-4513. Let's see what people are weighing in on social media. Here's a little historical commentary. Lewis at Lewis V. Christian. Ali Sherman and Fran Tarkenton, first edition of the West Coast offense.
To some degree, but truthfully, and he is right. He is right. Tarkenton threw a lot of checkdowns to Ron Johnson and to tight end Bob Tucker. Swing passes, checkdowns, screens. Yes, to some degree that is correct. Where the Giants really went heavy-duty West Coast offense was in 72 with Norm Snead. Now, Norm didn't have a strong arm. He was old at that point. He was on his way down. Did not have a strong arm, did not have any mobility whatsoever. I mean, you talk about how Kurt Warner was a statue. Norm was old and a statue, okay? And so everything that Norm Snead did was the short pass. I don't want to give a number out, but I can't remember how many long passes he threw that season. So they were really an exclusively West Coast offense in 72. They wanted him to get rid of the ball quick. Snead that year sacked in single digits.
Wow.
I believe the Giants allowed like 8 sacks the whole season because they went exclusively to a West Coast attack, and it was up to Norm to get rid of that ball in a hurry. Tucker Fredrickson and Ron Johnson and Bob Tucker, those guys had to turn around as soon as the ball was hiked because the ball was coming their way.
And get rid of it, yeah. Well, and that's why probably he didn't take that many sacks. He got rid of the football quickly.
No question.
Described.
They knew. They knew they were an undersized offensive line. They did not have a tremendous amount of talent there. And so it was just get rid of it. And, of course, Norm being as old as he was at that point, too, they didn't want him taking too many hits.
Let's head back to Twitter. Mark in Chicago at Mark FRM Chicago. Please update the Rhett Ellison calf injury and severity. Not heard this after Cruz's calf injury. Makes me unsettled. Well, Len had asked that exact question earlier in the program, and I'll rehash it in case you may have missed it. We're not at the point where training camp has started and the injury is still lingering, so I don't think it's time necessarily to hit the panic button. And let me just throw out some numbers here. Rhett Ellison entered the league in 2012 with the Vikings. Played all 16 games in 2012. In 13, he was limited to 11. That's when he suffered that significant injury. But then he returned for the 14 season and played all 16 games that year. 15 and 16 each of the last two seasons, he played 15. So he's missed 2 games in the span of the last 3 seasons, going back to 2014. So he's proven to be fairly durable if you look over the course of his career. I don't know whether or not he's ever dealt with a calf injury, and I don't believe actually he was asked about that when he's met with the media about whether or not he's actually dealt with something like this before. Do you remember if that
came up at all?
I
did ask him at the presser the other day when he came out and talked to the writers, and he had said no, he had not.
So this is the first time that he's ever dealing with this type of an injury. Okay, so at least we've clarified that. But once again, that doesn't mean that he can't recover and he can't handle. The one thing, though, that the players have talked about, they have a new nutritionist on staff who's also assisted in terms of the weight room in the offseason. And
Correct.
They've spoken very highly of him just in terms of being embedded with them mm-hmm. in the room and looking at new ways to stay in shape, gain extra muscle, eat right. So that, to me, I think has taken a significant impact on this team. And that's why I think they're also being extra cautious with some of these injuries in the early stages of the offseason. But right now, I once again, can't emphasize enough that I don't think we're there yet where there needs to be some type of a panic or some type of a concern. But do not be surprised, though, if he is somewhat limited during the course of mandatory minicamp because they still may be holding him back in some capacity.
My foot's a little sore. I banged it on the furniture this morning.
Well, that doesn't mean that you're going to be limited. I can guarantee you that.
No.
Yes. And with practice getting underway, we are going to head out so we can monitor the ins and outs of what's happening on the first day of mandatory minicamp. Big Blue Kickoff Live, though, with you each and every weekday the remainder of the week. Special time again starting 11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. So for those of you who are set at noon Eastern, make sure you push your clocks back a little bit to get readjusted. We'll kick off the program again at 11 a.m. Eastern. But we appreciate all the phone calls. Appreciate all the tweets. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest info. They'll have full pressers and full analysis in terms of the latest articles up on the website. So stay locked there. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.